Up next is the best of the Larry Miller Show from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Lee Rayburn inviting you to join us starting Monday, July 6th, as we continue Larry's legacy. It may be my name, but this will always be your show. The Lee Rayburn Show, live from 11 to 1 on WPR News.
Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Miller here. Thanks for spending some of your day with us. We begin the show today by talking with you about landscape lighting. And our guest today is Woody Kerwin. Woody is the owner of Night Owl Landscape Lighting in Waukesha. He's been in the landscape design business and build business for more than 10 years and has attended the International Landscape Lighting Institute's intensive course. Great to have him with us today, and we'll talk with him about the benefits of lighting, landscape lighting. We'll talk about new technologies, how you might best select and position fixtures. Woody Kerwin, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
How'd you get interested in landscape lighting?
Well, it was a journey that started in 2011 when I got into the green industry in general, working in general landscaping. I was introduced to landscape lighting that year. And while I kind of had a plan to always get into business somewhere in the green industry, once I discovered lighting, it was just, you know, I just completely took off in that direction, and I found a passion for something that, I mean, it's such a niche industry. It's, you almost don't know it's there, you know, if you're not a part of, you know, the green industry or the electrical industry. And so I just dived in, learned as much as I could, and took me to where I am now.
Yeah. What do you like best about it?
Probably the best part is meeting clients in the evening after we've completed a project, turning on the lights, walking around with them, and viewing the transformation with them. That's usually the most exciting part of any project.
Yeah, I would bet that. And it was fun to watch the, I bet you look at the faces of the homeowners when they see that maybe for the first time. It's got to be satisfying.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of people aren't, you know, fully aware of what's possible with a well-designed lighting system. So to see their yard in a completely different way at night, all of a sudden, when they're used to just daylight and what might be a beautiful landscape all day, you know, how we design the lights, where we put the lights, what we select to bring out of the darkness really can, you know, have a big emotional impact on people and really change how they view their whole property.
So let's talk about some more the advantages of adding lighting to your landscape. You kind of touched on them in a way, but there are several advantages to adding lighting.
Yeah, that's correct. There's three main things that we focus on: safety, security, and aesthetics. Safety being wayfinding, so pathways and steps, deck steps, areas around a pool, things that you need lit so if you have guests or people, kids wandering around at night, they can safely see where they're going without having hazards. So that's the safety part of it. Security, lighting is, you know, there are mixed studies on lighting in general, but it does make people feel safer, and it does deter crime. So that's a big part of it. A lot of people are interested in that aspect of lighting. And then the aesthetics is really making your yard beautiful, and tying all those elements together with good aesthetics is how you have a successful end result of your lighting system.
You know, I would think if you've got a well-lighted landscape, the curb appeal and value of the property should be higher.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We do talk to clients about that quite a bit. And anyone who's gone house shopping, you know, in the last 5 years in particular, you'll see a lot of nighttime photos of properties now on listings. It might just be the house, illuminated, but a well-lit house is a big attraction, and it most certainly makes your property, you know, visually more appealing, which adds to value. You know, it's a bit of a subjective value for some people, but knowing that's already taken care of if you're moving to a house that has it, to make you feel more secure and to enjoy your yard. It's definitely something there.
And I've been to some homes that have been well lighted, the landscape and the ambience of that. I mean, I'm thinking of one in particular, the shadows and the highlights, unique features of a tree, for example, really adds a lot of interest. And that feeling of, boy, this is a really cool place.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. When we start looking at a yard for lighting, we try to identify the focal points and the unique characteristics of that landscape that we want to draw out at night. And you mentioned shadows and darkness. And so contrast is an enormous part of any lighting, particularly in the landscape because it's so dark. But we can select the things that are most important to see at night. And leaving other areas dark really makes those things pop even more. So if you have a cherished tree in your yard that you planted when your kids were young, as an example, or you have garden art or something that gets, it can get a little bit lost in the daytime in a mulch bed, you know, depending on what it looks like. Well, now if we draw that out with some well-placed lighting, you know, good light levels, correct beam angles, all of a sudden the yard looks just completely different, and it really draws people outside if you have backyard patios.
And you know, as I was thinking about this too, with modern LED lighting, I think it's much more energy efficient than maybe 15 years ago, or even less than that ago. And with the color options, that you have with the LED, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been a big change in our industry with LED. Definitely much more efficient. I mean, something around 75% more efficient than an old incandescent system. So that's an important part right there. I mean, everything is LED now. There aren't halogen systems going in around here anymore. It just allows you to do so much more. You need so much less power to run a system. And then the LEDs, like you mentioned, with color changing, it opens up that whole door, which is a whole new thing. You can really play around with that stuff. It's a lot of fun. It's not for every yard, but it is a lot of fun, and it can produce some really cool effects and talk about really changing the way your landscape looks.
Yeah. I went on your website at Night Owl Landscaping, and I was looking at some of the color, the things with color you've done with some of the homes. It's really quite spectacular, but you're also right. It was not going to work everywhere.
No, it's not for everyone. Some people like it because it's a holiday lighting shortcut in some ways. If you're already going to put in a lighting system, now it can just be red and green. And now that saves some trouble on the roof. Some people have a lot of entertaining and they do private events, and that's a whole other direction to go with possibilities for that. But it's with LEDs in general, not just the color changing part of it, we can pick color temperatures. And that's another level of this where you can pick a cooler white to highlight something that's a green or a blue or a warmer white or an even warmer white for like a bistro lighting type of scenario. So it's very much a flexible medium for us to work with.
What do you think, I've seen some lighting, exterior lighting that I really loved and some that I maybe didn't like at all. What are some common mistakes people make when they go to, you know, light up their landscape?
A lot of times it's intensity. So less is more in landscape lighting. We want subtle, and sometimes that's multiple subtle light sources versus what sometimes might happen is someone might install a singular, very bright light source to cover, say, half of the house. and that just looks very commercial. It doesn't look inviting. So in those instances, multiple fixtures, you know, in specific areas with subtler outputs would have created a nicer effect. So we see that a lot. We see a lot of overdone pathway lights where there's just way too many on a walkway. It looks like an airport runway. Those are two of the most common mistakes that you can drive down most any street around here at night. And you'll pick out a couple of those, and right away, and once you see it once, you'll start to really, you'll notice it, and you'll become a little bit more attuned to what it should be.
I was thinking, if you've got half your, you know, I've seen this where all the lights on one side of a property, and then there's nothing on the other side, and that to me, I thought, why would you do that?
That's a lack of balance. So another part of the design process that, you know, when you start thinking about what do we want to do with this yard, we have to think about balance. We don't want to have that real heavy lighting to just one side, and just at night the whole thing looks off. It's a very inconsistent scene.
And I'm wondering about fixtures too. Fixtures, if you don't use the right kind of fixture, you might spotlight a path with small spotlights. Or maybe you choose something that doesn't look, in the end, doesn't look good with your home. So there's a lot of different things that go into this.
There really is. And there are a lot of different fixtures. And, you know, back to the LED component of this, that has really allowed even more fixture types to be developed because we can make them so small now. We can fit them in such tight spaces. The possibilities are endless. It's knowing what to pick, you know, it's knowing what to select for what you're lighting. Do you need a wash light? Do you need a wide, diffused, soft light on something low or a low wall? Do you need a spotlight that can push a narrow beam angle all the way up a tall column? Knowing which of those to pick is what helps create that light, that scene at night that we're looking for.
Do you guys do, does your company do maintenance? One thing that is kind of, you know, if there are lights that aren't working and half are and some are and some aren't, that, and, you know, that's probably a maintenance kind of thing. Do you do maintenance work?
Yeah, absolutely. We're pretty big proponents of talking to people about that and why it's so important. It's like anything in your house, any utility or any investment. Only this one lives outside, and in our case in Wisconsin, through the four seasons. So the effect will degrade over time if some TLC is not performed. You know, basic stuff like cleaning, straightening, and pruning, and readjusting. All of that is essential to keeping the effects the same way. And then that also, you can stay on top of, you know, LED lamp issues when they come up. We can get ahead of failures, replace things. Sometimes trees always grow for the most part. So if we go to a property we did 5 years ago, we might need to put a higher powered light source into that same fixture to now light a tree that is 10 feet taller. Whereas if we didn't do that, that tree would look poorly lit all of a sudden, where it looked great 5 years ago. So keeping up with that really is extremely important in my estimation.
Woody Kerwin, our guest, he is the owner of Night Owl Landscaping Lighting, and it's great to have him with us today. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today for Garden Talk. Today we are starting the show by taking a look at landscape lighting with our guest Woody Kerwin. Woody is the owner of Night Owl Landscaping Lighting. It's great to have him with us as we visit with Woody Kerwin about landscaping and lighting. Will emailed, and you kind of mentioned this earlier, but landscape lighting in terms of wondering about, does it really deter home break-ins?
Well, I can't speak exactly to that, but there have been a lot of studies have been done on this, I will say that, and some of them point aggressively towards yes, and most of these studies are done for municipalities for lighting streets, lighting parks, parking lots, areas like that. And then on the other side, they've also found studies that say, well, this, if you overlight a space, for an example, and you have a lot of glare from, let's say, a street light that is very bright, glare creates contrast. That's such a bright spot in your eye. All the spaces around it all of a sudden feel darker. And in those instances, well, now all of a sudden it doesn't feel the same way. So from what I've gathered from all the studies that have been done, it can go either way, but the general feeling is people feel more secure with lighting around, and that's important too. And some lighting in areas around the home is certainly better than none, in my opinion.
What I was, somebody, Amy in Sheboygan County called to remind people to be courteous to neighbors when using lighting. And well, maybe you can comment on that. At one point, I had a neighbor whose garage, the light above the garage door, the first night I moved into the house in the at night, I was in my second story bedroom, and it was like suddenly my whole bedroom was lit up by the neighbor's light. And it was one of these motion sensor lights, so anytime a raccoon or something walked through in the night, the place lit up again.
Yeah, so light trespass is a very important thing to be aware of. A lot of the offenders of light trespass are, like you just said, floodlights on houses that are pointing out across your yard, into your neighbor's space, post lights, coach lights that are omnidirectional. So they're open glass, they're throwing light in all directions. A well-designed landscape lighting system, and they are not all well-designed, will use properly shielded fixtures so you can rotate those shields to cut off light from the directions you don't want it. So if the fixtures are thoughtful and specified correctly, that is almost a non-issue, but there is a lot more lighting out there that's either landscape or on your house that is that does not fall into that category, that has not been thoughtful in that way. And those are very common things we hear from customers and potential customers that we are always aware of.
Yeah, I would think so. And she also wondered, how long should lights be left on? You know, they don't have to be on all the time. And I guess what's the timing on lighting for night?
It's up to the individual, but the majority of folks will want it to go off when they go to bed. So that's somewhere between 10 and midnight in many instances. Some people want it on all night, and that might be a security concern. I believe it should go off when you go to bed, but if you do want certain zones on, there are all sorts of lighting controls available that we can set things up so that maybe only a subtle amount of light is still on your front walkway or at the front of your door or something like that. You can isolate those zones and control them separately with all of the available technology we use now. So that you could, if you had a security concern and it just made you feel safer, you could still accomplish that without leaving your whole yard lit up from sunset to sunrise.
I'm wondering about those controls. I mean, how how tech conscious do you need to be to operate those controls?
There is a pretty wide variety of ways to control a system, from a basic timer, which runs everything from whatever time you want it on to whatever time you want it off. To manual controls like a dimmer, like you might have on the wall in your house. You can dim certain elements, certain zones of your yard like that. But more commonly nowadays, it's done through Wi-Fi, and multiple manufacturers have different product lines with different apps, but you can, in the best cases, you can separate out each individual fixture in your yard, and on some of these systems can be controlled separately. So you can group it up with like all your tree lights in the backyard, for example, it could be one zone. You can dim them all together. You could time them all separately so they shut off at midnight, but maybe your path lights around the patio stay on until sunrise if you like. And you could even dim those down to say 50% and then leave them on for the rest of the night. But those apps, you know, to answer that question, they do get a little bit, you know, there's a learning curve to anything like that with technology nowadays. And it's, you know, something we support, of course, but we teach people how to do these things. There's videos online. There's ways to learn this stuff. And it's very beneficial if you have concerns about, you know, not wanting to overlight, not wanting to be a bug to your neighbors.
Is there something where I could push one button and the lights dim in the back and they dim in the front, but not as much? I'm talking about a preset there.
Yes, there are also preset ways you can do that. A lot of that will come through, like, if you have a home automation system, which isn't our specialty, but it runs a lot of our lighting systems. If your home already has those types of controls for the lighting inside of your house, like a Lutron system is an example, and you have a pad on your wall where you just push a button to hit those light levels inside, you can do that. You can transfer that to your outside lighting exactly as you described. Push a button, and boom, the preset takes everything to 50% in the backyard.
That is nice. Bill emailed, do cities or towns have rules, regulations on how much or how bright outdoor lighting can be?
They do, and they are becoming more and more common around the country. So dark sky regulations, as they're often known, will set limits on light output to a property. So maximum amount of lumens, types of fixtures. So, and again, a lot of those offenders turn out to be coach lights and post lights that are throwing omnidirectional light into your neighbor's yard. But there, you know, there is a growing concern about dark sky and sky glow at night. And a lot of those rules end up, we have to work with those rules in a lot of neighborhoods. Madison has, like, Sherwood Hills has a pretty tight dark sky rule set. But a lot of the problem is municipality lighting and commercial lighting. That is where you're talking 20 to 30,000 lumen fixtures with really high color temperatures, like daylight LEDs reflecting off concrete, bouncing into the sky. I mean, that is where a lot of the concern originates. But on a local, smaller level, it is the light trespass. Neighbors don't want that floodlight in their bedroom window at night, and they want to make sure you're following the rules and keeping everybody happy.
Carrie in Cronenwetter emailed about concerns on how outdoor lighting affects plants and wildlife's natural environments. She wonders if there's ways to address that, or how do you address that?
Another great point. And that's why I'm a proponent of when you go to bed, your lights turn off, because there are birds, there are insects. Creatures live in some of the trees that we light and in the yards that we're lighting, and they need rest too. So I think it's just a good practice to, you know, if for the majority of your landscape, to not have it running for the entire night, if possible, to be cognizant of those types of things. Plant material, there are certain evergreens that we've seen that if they're under other stress and if they have lights on them, we've seen defoliation very few times, and this is something we have looked into. So if you're lighting up a tree, when you get to kind of later in the year when that tree's trying to go dormant, it might think daylight is extended beyond what it actually is, and it may go dormant later, making it susceptible to potential frost or something like this. And so we do have to be thoughtful about that too. It's a very rare occurrence, but it is something that has been seen, and is something we have talked to customers about.
Talking today with Woody Kerwin, and Woody is owner of Night Owl Landscaping Lighting. Great to have him with us today. And what does your landscape lighting look like? How might you get it improved, or what do you think about the neighbors? We've heard a few of those comments already. I'm wondering, what should people look for when selecting a lighting company? I mean, there are lots of them out there, not a huge number, but quite a few lighting companies. And if I'm looking for one, what do I look for?
Well, the first thing you should look at is their portfolio. Look at their work, see what they've done in the past. How do they treat light? You know, what is important, you know, to that company? How are they going to make your yard look? So the portfolio will give you a lot of those clues right away. And then I'd say, like anytime you're hiring a contractor to do anything, you know, maybe talk to more than one and see what other ideas, you know, one might have versus another. Design is, you know, people have different design philosophies. They may choose to do different things or suggest different things with your yard. And you want to make sure you're getting someone who's listening to you and what you want to accomplish with your lights and make a decision that way. So that is how I approach when I'm having work done. I want to see what the viewpoints are. I suggest people do the same thing. It's make a well-rounded decision.
Well, I think you're based basically in Waukesha, but you work in other areas as well.
Correct. Yeah, we do. Yep. We work in Madison. We work all of Southeast Wisconsin. We do travel. It's a very specialty industry, so we do travel.
Yeah. Mary Ann is wondering if you need to adjust or worry about landscape lighting during the cold winter and maybe snowy months.
It is a great question because with LED, we now have fixtures that aren't as hot, which is a bonus. If you have lights on your desk, on your deck, and they were halogen, they could be extremely hot and someone could bump those and burn their hand, and now they are not. Now they're 70, 80 degrees running temperatures. But in the wintertime, a little bit less than that. So the big thing in winter with landscape lighting in terms of maintenance is heavy snowfall. LEDs will still warm up enough to melt off snow, but it will take time. And if you get, you know, a 10, 12 inch snowfall, you may have to, you know, by the time you're done addressing all the other things on your property of getting the snow out of the way and you remember you have lights, you might have to go brush them off because they may take a little longer than you'd like to get through that amount of snow.
And the outdoor, I assume the way they're made or manufactured or put together, they're gonna deal with snow events. Obviously, they got to deal with rain events too, but
absolutely, high quality fixtures, which are extremely important to the longevity of the system, are going to be weatherproof. They are going to be watertight. So just like the rain, they will be okay with the snow.
You also install outdoor audio. That's changed a lot over the years. When I did builder I was working with or the remodeler said, oh, you ought to install some attachments outside so you can hook up your audio if you want to. Well, so I've got some holes in the wall and some wire hanging out that I will never use or have to use.
Yeah, those. And that is the traditional outdoor audio is a couple of speakers on the, you know, back of your house over your patio, over your deck, whatever it is. Now we do outdoor surround sound system. So it's opened up it's basically taking hi-fi audio outdoors, which was very difficult to do because inside your audio systems have walls to reverberate against you. And outside is just open space. So the sound travels and it doesn't get captured the same way. So using surround systems with multiple smaller speakers and even subwoofers, subterranean subwoofers, that getting those low frequencies that are very hard to, they're easy to get inside with walls, but are harder to replicate outdoors. Once you incorporate something like that into a surround sound audio system, it's It's definitely an excellent addition to, you know, a really nice landscape. Another enhancement that you can do to use it more and enjoy it more.
Wow, surround sound. So you've got, where do these speakers, I mean, is there one behind the rose bush? And when, yeah, I mean, what would something like that look like?
You got it. So if you had a patio, you know, you might have, you know, a medium-sized patio, you might have eight smaller bullet-shaped speakers, these smaller speakers kind of evenly spaced all around the patio, directed in towards the patio, so the sound is all focused. And we can hide them behind rose bushes and perennials and whatever else, and try to keep them tucked out of the way. A lot of resorts have been doing things like this, where they'll have it, you know, around the pool at a resort, you'll see individual speakers kind of spaced all around, so that if you're hanging out around the pool, you can hear the music evenly everywhere without having to have it turned up so loud you can't talk over it. So a good surround audio system gives you that effect of everybody hears everything well, it's clear, it's nice, but you can still talk and have, you know, conversations.
The cost on that sort of thing has come down quite a bit, I think.
Those systems, I wouldn't say that they're somewhat new in the sense of maybe the last 10, 15 years they've become more popular. And so now there are more options in the marketplace, which, yes, that does drive costs.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see. We've got Louise with an email. What impact does landscape lighting have on my electric bill?
Well, depends on the size of the system, of course, and how long you run it. If you run it for, you know, if you set it to turn on at sunset and off at, just say, midnight, you know, those hours change throughout the year. So you add that up. With LED, most systems we install are running off of a 300-watt transformer, which is rarely ever fully loaded. So let's say 200 watts. Compare that to, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you've got four incandescent 50-watt lamps in your house. That's the equivalent of four of those lamps running, and you might have 30 to 40 light fixtures in your yard running. So it's a blip on the bill nowadays is the best way to put it, unless you've got a 10-acre property and you really went all out.
George email, can you describe what do you mean by wet-rated fixtures? Are there different ratings that make some fixtures less susceptible to water damage than others?
Yeah, great question. So there is a rating system, IP rating system. So IP68, for example, is waterproof. And then 67, 66, you go down that list and they test these fixtures against driving rain from different directions in order to achieve those ratings. Those are also dust ingress ratings, so how much dirt and whatever else can draw into there. So depending on what you're doing, if you're lighting a water feature, you obviously would need an IP68 rated submersible fixture. If you're just putting up lights in a mulch bed, you don't need a fixture that watertight, but you still need it to resist driving rain or irrigation systems. Many of the properties we work on have irrigation, which water coming horizontally from whatever direction. Yeah. And you don't want that to get in there either. So, you know, a properly designed system will have all of that bear in mind.
Mark is wondering, what should he budget for lighting a small patio? He's got a small patio attached to his house and a path that goes around the house. So you got a path, and it's, I mean, I'm not here seeing the size of the patio or the length of the path, but assuming sort of a standard house in the city of Madison, you might have something, maybe a porch that's 12, 15 feet maybe, or 20 feet across would be probably fairly common.
Sure. Yeah. And every property, of course, is different and every system is designed to it. But knowing, you know, budget numbers are important. So if you're installing a professionally designed lighting system, you should expect that to start around $2,500. Which is going to get your power supply and your timer, whatever you decide to do for control, and a handful of fixtures depending on the type. And then building upon that, an average lighting system for a front or backyard, if it's relatively comprehensive, is going to be somewhere between, you know, $4,000 and $7,000 a side if you're doing sort of a standard warm white system, not getting into the bells and the whistles of color changing and high-tech controls and things like that.
Joanne emailed to ask to say her dog likes to dig. should she be concerned with digging up wires from the lighting?
Well, a number of concerns with dogs digging in the garden, for sure. Your bulbs, all sorts of things might come up. It shouldn't damage wiring, but what dogs dig, we see them dig against foundations of houses a lot, and a lot of wiring should be run along foundations. So it's, you know, so if you ever renovated your garden beds and wanted to change out your perennials or bushes or whatever, you don't have wires running willy-nilly through the mulch bed. So we do see them dig against foundations. They do expose wiring. If you've got a dog that likes to chew on wiring, you might have other problems as well. But more commonly, we see pests, you know, other rodents that are actually causing damage to wire.
Oh, man. I tell you what. Woody Kerwin, our guest today, is the owner of Night Owl Landscaping Lighting. It works based in Waukesha, but works around southern Wisconsin. Many places, including Madison and others as well. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at outdoor landscape lighting today with our guest, Woody Kerwin. It's great to have him with us. Tom emailed, what's the possible impact of installing landscape lighting on my yard? Do installers, I mean, what does it look like? I mean, any damage or whatever that might occur to the sod or the trees or whatever, I assume the installers... Well, what do you do in this in terms of?
Yeah, that's a great question. One we get asked regularly. So everything we do is low voltage. So low voltage has different rules than, say, your 120 volt house power, which let's say that you were running that around your yard, you'd have to trench in 12, 18 inch deep conduits and really make a mess of the yard. We're able to install everything low voltage with hand tools, essentially. So we get down, you know, 6-7 inches everywhere we go, but it's, we can work around perennials. We can use sort of flat blade trenching tools to split your turf open, get the wire down 7 inches and then tamp that shut. And you've just got, you know, in the middle of summer, you might have a little yellow seam across your lawn. If we had to cross the lawn somewhere, that will, you know, heal up on its own. But we are very, it's very important to us that your landscape looks just like it did when we, you know, show up. By the time we're done, you should just have a beautiful landscape lighting system, and you should not know we were there. The landscape should look excellent.
Okay. You know, I went on, I looked at your photo array, and it's really, really some beautiful work. One of the areas that kind of struck me was art and sculpture outside. And that to me, I mean, those were very dramatic in their own way. I mean, they weren't big splashy lights or anything, but the lighting on the face of a piece of sculpture that you had, and the shadows that were created were just beautiful.
It's definitely one of my favorite things to work with is a garden that has a lot of unique art and other things like that. Those are, often become our focal points in a lighting scene. And we don't want to necessarily overlight them. Like you say, there's shadowing, there's texture from shadow. So to show some shadowing is an important part of any lighting design, because it helps define the light even better. It helps define what you're lighting. And so when we come across a yard that has a bunch of custom art or something really cool or something that's just really special to a homeowner, and being able to bring that out of the dark for them and make that just more of a focal point at night is always very special. We do love working with that.
Even your eyes light up when you see an opportunity like that, I bet.
We can work with what you have, essentially. The canvas that you present is what we paint with light. It's said in our industry a lot is we paint with light. And so what you have is what we can work with. And,
Jennifer emailed, how far apart should outdoor fixtures, should they be from each other? I'm assuming she may be thinking about a walkway, but maybe not.
I would assume so. That is typically where those rules will come into play. And there are some factors with that, such as how wide of a throw does the path light have? How much space does it cover? But our general rule of thumb is 12 to 18 feet, depending on the walkway, depending on how well-traveled it is. A lot of things we see now with front yards, they have a walkway to their front door, but most people just drive into the garage and they go right into the garage. So that front walkway, unless you're entertaining or keeping the lights on for the delivery guys, they don't get used all that often. So we don't have to overdo that, and never want to overdo path lights. That always makes a landscape look too busy, even during the day. Your path lights here and there, too many is too many, and you know it when you see it. So I would say 15 feet is a very good rule. And then plus or minus, depending.
Do you use solar lighting at all? I see, you can buy solar lights for walkways, for example.
We do not. There are no great solar options in an individual fixture. The panels are too small. The batteries that store the power are too small. The light output is too low. Wisconsin isn't a phenomenal area in general for solar, compared to the Southwest. So certain times of year, you're getting almost nothing out of those lights, and the construction of them, plastic, things like that. Unfortunately, they are still kind of a throwaway thing. They're a nice kind of stopgap, and sometimes it's all the budget allows for, but we only do wired systems.
David emailed to ask, what kinds of lighting would you suggest for a historic house and garden?
So we have to be pretty careful with those. So a lot of times that, we'll want to pick fixtures that have a material that is consistent with, a property like that. Like if it's an old stone house in Wauwatosa, for example, that's a historic house. Natural metals are important. Using like a copper fixture that's going to patina and look like what might be some copper gutters or something on their house. So fixture style is important in those aspects to me. And then just being tasteful with anything historic, not overdoing something, making sure you're showing a true rendering of something like that. Not getting carried away and over lighting, things like that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How long does a project take from start to finish for your company, from talking to the people and so forth, and right to the not the bitter end, the lighted end, let's put it that way.
Yeah, so the consultation process where we meet people and find out, you know, why do they want light? What is it for? And putting together a plan can take, you know, a few days. Installations vary. A lot of projects are done in a day on a typical sized house if we're just doing one side of the property. And then really big projects can stretch to multiple weeks. But the vast majority of medium-sized homes, you know, are done in 1 to 2 days. Say that pretty safely.
Yeah. And are they, do you do them or when we've got some cold weather outside and harder because you got frozen, you may have frozen, I suppose you can't work with frozen ground. I don't imagine.
Yeah, you're right. Usually when the frost gets below about an inch or two, that's when we call it a season. This year we got stopped a little bit early with all that early snow, but that also did serve to insulate the ground. So underneath the snow, shoveling it away, it was still soft. So Christmas is a good, typically every year we're working up to Christmas Eve.
Jim and Cable has a comment. Hi, Jim.
Hi. We had a challenge. I heard an earlier caller ask about historic lighting for historic houses. I was on a board that restored Orchard Lawn in Mineral Point, which is an 1868 Victorian house. And we needed exterior lighting because we had nighttime events and for safety and whatnot. We didn't want to introduce any new aspects into the landscape. They weren't there historically. So what we wound up doing was tree lighting, lighting from inside the canopy of the tree that shined down onto the driveway and picked up the shadows of the lower branches. And we matched the color temperature to moonlight.
Oh.
So as you walked down the driveway, it looked like there was a full moon and you saw the shadows of the branches on the driveway.
Oh,
man. And it was
just
magical.
Oh, man, Jim, that sounds great. And you're nodding in agreement on that one, Woody.
Moonlighting is one of my favorite effects. We do a lot of moonlighting, a lot of downlighting from trees. It's just it's a natural way that you see light naturally coming from above, of course, during the day. So it's a great way to tie in lighting on the ground plane with all, you know, the other uplighting that may go on with the property. It really creates a great flow, and the dappled sort of moonlight effect you can get from shining down through branches is magical, like he says.
Oh, that is very cool. Jim, thank you very much for calling. And Woody, thank you so much for taking an hour of your time to be with us and talk about landscape lighting. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's certainly been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Woody Kerwin is the owner of Night Owl Landscaping Lighting, and he's got a really nice site online that with a lot of wonderful photos of the work that they have done, or that he and his crew have done. Great to have him with us. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on WPR News.